Al Franken. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, on this show, we do a feature called Your Minnesota Moment, news from my hometown of St. Paul that you won't get from Garrison Keillor.
Okay.
And back in August, we did a segment of Your Minnesota Moment on the topic, Minnesota native sued by Fox News. You, of course, are from St. Louis Park. You grew up in St. Louis Park.
Right. And suburb of Minneapolis for your listeners.
And Minnesota is just all over this story in so many ways. You found out that Fox was suing you while you were on vacation with your family in Duluth.
No, I was in Italy. But
well, and then
it was close.
You,
I was in Umbria.
you wrote this number one best-selling book with the help of a bunch of very brilliant students from the University of Minnesota.
Oh, actually, they were from Harvard.
And this whole thing started when you had a confrontation with Bill O'Reilly at the Book Expo at the Mall of America.
Well, it was the Book Expo, but it was not at the Mall of America. It was at the Luge, the ice luge at the St. Paul Cab. No, it was here in L.A. But I'm from St. Louis Park. Okay. I am.
And I understand, I want to make sure that we get these right, because your book is about the lies, the errors, the mistakes made by the Wall Street Journal and Coulter Fox News. So I just want to make sure we don't make mistakes.
Yeah, that's why I'm correct.
Here on this program. So I understand that in the Fox News court papers, they described you as tall, good-looking, and above average.
No. They called me deranged. Shrill, unstable, intoxicated, a parasite, a C-level commentator, and I think that was it. But they didn't actually call me those things. They said the press had called me those things.
Okay.
And the press that they cited for those were from the what I call the prestigious internet. And they were right-wing websites in fact, one of the websites on its homepage brags that even if you're an amateur writer, if you submit to us, you have a far greater chance of being published than on almost any other website. So that's the high standards to which Fox held itself in the complaint, which, by the way, had nothing to do with anything.
So of course, what put this book on the front page of all the newspapers was that Fox lawsuit. Yeah. How did you come up with the idea of getting Fox News to sue you?
I hypnotized them. We were at the Radio and TV Correspondents' Dinner, where I spoke in 2002, and Ailes and O'Reilly came up to me, and they actually liked what I had done. And I said, I looked in their eyes, and I hypnotized them, I put them under, and I said, I'm going to come out with the next book I come out, you're going to sue me, and when I snap my fingers, you'll forget everything I said. And they didn't realize it, but I had hypnotized them. And to this day, they don't think I did.
We're speaking with Al Franken about his number one best-selling book, Lies and the Lying Liars, Who Tell Them a Fair and Balanced Look at the Right. Of course, that lawsuit was about your use of the term fair and balanced, which
That's
Fox News regarded as their copyrighted property.
Trademarked.
Trademark property. Trademark property. Do you think Fox News has learned its lesson from this episode?
You mean don't listen to O'Reilly when it comes to lawsuits? I think they may have learned that one. I think they also learned something. I think basically what happened was O'Reilly, after this dust-up we had in L.A. at the Book Expo in L.A., not at the Mall of America, I think that he has been in an infantile rage since. And part of that infantile rage led to the lawsuit. And I think Fox said, look, he won't give up. We got to do it. And besides, our listener, you know, our viewers will be rooting for us anyway. And I think they, Bush once said, he didn't mind being misunderestimated. I think they misunderestimated the public reaction, because no one thought this was a good idea. Not literally no one, but I mean 99% of Americans know there's a First Amendment and know that satire is protected speech, even if the object of the satire doesn't get it.
It's an important part of the First Amendment.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that in the First Amendment?
No, it isn't. I think it was sort of inherent in the idea. But I mean, just because O'Reilly could say, I don't get it, that doesn't mean that the court has to suppress the book.
It was Bill O'Reilly who really was the instigator and the force behind the suit, you think?
Well, this is what everyone who I've talked to at Fox tells me. This is what every journalist who talked to people at Fox tells me, is what O'Reilly says it isn't the case. I don't know who to believe.
Now, you do take O'Reilly to task, let us say, in your book for
some of the other things. Let me just say that I just don't want, and I'll be happy. I love talking about O'Reilly, believe me. But the book is more than about Fox and more than about O'Reilly. It's about this administration. But let's keep going.
Well, I just love what you found out about O'Reilly's upbringing. He had always said he grew up in the classic all-American working class town of Levittown, New York. And you put your research team, the Harvard students, to work on this, and they
researched
property titles and ancient newspapers. How did they?
Well, it was just a Washington Post article, but his his mother said that actually he grew up in Westbury.
Your source was his mother.
Yeah, that's our inside source. His mother. And
and how did you get her to talk?
We just got her. She cracked. No, I think she is proud of the fact that they grew up in Westbury and that, you know.
And what's the difference between Westbury and Levittown for those of us who don't know
the difference? Yeah. Westbury is an affluent town, and Levittown is the working class town. And I think he grew up in a Levitt house, a house designed by Levitt.
The great
Arthur. Now he makes the distinction. He says now that I grew up in the Westbury section of Levittown, which there is no such thing. It's like saying I grew up in Brooklyn, the Manhattan section of Brooklyn. It's crazy. But I think he grew up and now he's going like, it was a two-bedroom, one-bath house. And that's exactly what I grew up in St. Louis Park on West 25th Street. His dad made, he said, the most my dad ever made was $35,000, and that was, his dad retired in 1978, so that was okay in 1978. My dad, I don't think, ever made more than $10,000 or something like that, and I haven't gone around going like, yeah, I've earned everything I got. He has said, like, I grew up as low on the economic ladder as you can get. And no, that's not true.
No.
And, you know,
it's a lie. Actually, it's a lie.
It's actually kind of a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, that might not be the exact wording, but that's the exact thought. I mean, I can find the exact wording in my chapter, Bill O'Reilly, Lying Splotchy Bully.
We're flipping pages here rapidly while Al Franken goes through his book, Lies in the Lies.
Yeah, you don't come from any lower than I came from on an economic scale.
On an economic scale.
He told the New York Observer. That might surprise some children in Ethiopia and Watts and North Minneapolis.
Another subject of your book is Ann Coulter. I checked her website this morning, and she has a long section claiming to refute you on many angry points. And she only concedes one, but she says the fact that the one that you got her on, the page one story about the NASCAR, it kind of doesn't really matter what it was, but you really nailed her on one. She said that's now on something like 200,000 websites that you caught her making a mistake. And this shows the power that you have in the media.
Yeah, that we lefties are really powerful on the web. Well, sort of the right. Yeah, if you read my book and then read her explanations of these things, she actually misrepresents what I get her for. She doesn't cover most of the stuff I get her on. There's one thing, which was she said that Evan Thomas was Norman Thomas's son.
Yeah.
And I do a thing like, how could you? He wasn't. And how could you possibly research that? So one of my Team Franken associates says, why don't you call up Evan Thomas? So I do the conversation between me and Evan Thomas. And I go, hi, Evan. I go, what is it, Al? I said, well, are you, it was Norman Thomas your father? And he says, no. and I,
this was the same approach you used with O'Reilly's mother.
Yeah, and so then I said, but now to be fair to Ann, I kept going just to make sure. I said, are you sure? And I said, yes. And then she says, now Evan Thomas is the grandson of Norman Thomas. And she says, I don't say it, but here it is on page 379 in the end notes, which, by the way, I chide her for because she always said, I have 759 footnotes. I have this many footnotes. She has no footnotes. She has endnotes. And there's nothing wrong with using endnotes. There really isn't, unless you're using it to hide stuff. And she does that all the time, to hide stuff. For example, one of my favorites, and she doesn't address this kind of thing at all, is the way she used endnotes in this paragraph and the way she deliberately misleads her readers, who she has evidently incredible contempt for. After Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas wrote an opinion contrary to the clearly expressed position of the New York Times editorial page, the Times responded with an editorial on Thomas titled The Youngest, Cruelest Justice. That was actually the headline on a lead editorial in the newspaper of record. Thomas is not engaged on the substance of his judicial philosophy. He is called a colored lawn jockey for conservative white interests, race traitor, black snake, chicken and biscuit eating Uncle Tom, house Negro and handkerchief head, et cetera, et cetera. Now, when she switches to the passive verb, Thomas is not engaged in the substance of his judicial philosophy, after saying that was actually the headline on a lead editorial in the newspaper record, it's creating the impression, it's deliberately written, so you think that the New York Times called Clarence Thomas a colored lawn jockey for conservative white interests,
that's what
et
I
cetera, would conclude. Right?
I was stunned, yes.
Yeah, well, they didn't. Okay. They didn't.
She so this put, would,
she
this
puts
would be a
number
lie.
On
this would
it.
Be a lie.
This would be a lie. And she says that, yeah, well, then you go back. Well, she said, no, I have an end note there. It says that Joycelyn Elders said these things.
Mm.
And in an interview to Playboy. And the point is that this is deliberately written to make her idiot readers who are reading because they want to confirm everything. They obsessively read stuff that confirms stuff they believe they already know. And she just feeds it to him. And she, of course, doesn't address that in her website. And she doesn't, and mainly, like, even about the footnotes and endnotes. The point of my saying that she doesn't use footnotes, she uses endnotes, is not to say that endnotes are a discredited way of doing things. It's to say that she deliberately uses them so that if you have 749 endnotes, you're not going to check every endnote if you're reading her book.
This is a fact.
So she is just, she's disgusting.
We're speaking with Al Franken.
Absolutely disgusting.
We're speaking with Al Franken. He's the author of the number one best-selling book, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. I want to go back to your unforgettable number one bestseller, Rush Limbaugh's A Big Fat Idiot. I understand you won a Grammy for this book.
Yeah, for the book on tape.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Yeah,
well,
you.
Rush has been in the news a lot. It seems like it might be time for a sequel. Rush Limbaugh
is a strung-out junkie or something like
Rush
that.
Rush Limbaugh is a big, fat drug addict?
Yeah, you know. You don't
think that's
wanna,
unfair?
No, but you have to have compassion.
Well, I wanted
for anyone.
Anyone who would send his housekeeper out to buy him 4,350 little blues in one 47-day period?
And pay for it with the cabbage? That's my favorite. First of all, we don't know if all that's true. Secondly, you have to be have compassion for someone who's addicted to drugs, unless they called Jerry Garcia a just a dead doper and a dirtbag when he died, which Rush did. But still, you have to have compassion. And unless he's a guy who said anyone who uses drugs illegally should be prosecuted and put away, which Rush has said repeatedly. And I do believe that Rush, after he gets out of rehab, will turn himself in and ask for the maximum term as, you know, as an example. I mean, the guy wants to set an example and be asked to be sent to the most dangerous prison they can possibly be sent to, where There'll be a lot of prisoners there who are also in just for possession of crack. So a lot of African-Americans in this country are in for just possession of crack. For some reason, we have different laws regarding crack and powder cocaine. So I hope he's put in the most dangerous prison, which I think he'd ask for the longest amount of time, with black guys who've heard his Donovan McNabb theories. And I just think that that would be the best thing for everybody, and especially for Rush, because, you know, part of program is taking responsibility for your actions and living a life of working a program of rigorous honesty, which means that he wouldn't be able to do his show anyway, so because there'd be nothing left for him to do. So I think prison probably sets an example consistent with what he said. Angry black guys. violent prison. But you have to have compassion.
Well,
a guy.
Thank you. Thank you for standing up for compassion, because yeah. I was going to criticize him, but you've talked me out of it.
Have to have compassion for him.
In the just couple minutes we have left here, I just wanted to talk about the medium of radio, kind of a natural segue from Rush. Rush, you know, kind of single-handedly brought back AM radio, created this incredible machine of the right-wing talk show. There's been some reports, some rumors, maybe that you are interested
I am.
In radio. What do you have in mind? What can you tell us about your plans?
There are some people I've been talking to for about 10 or 11 months about putting together a network, not unlike Pacifica, really, except maybe a little. A little bit more concentrating on entertainment and trying to do sort of NPR without the stories on Appalachian quilts and actually kind of funny and at least what I would do, and do what I do kind of in the book for my show. I would do a 3-hour day show, and it's sort of operating under the theory that you cannot do liberal talk radio in the landscape that exists now. I couldn't do a 3-hour show after Rush or after Hannity. And by definition, every talk radio network has these conservatives. So since radio is all about format, putting a liberal show after a conservative show is like putting hip-hop after country western. And we don't think that works. So the theory that we've been operating under is to create a all-day liberal talk and liberal news and liberal whatever show, network. And some progress has been made. I'm not totally satisfied with where we are now, but it's something I really want to do badly.
Sounds great. Al Franken?
Or do well.
Well, Al Franken is the author of Lies and Lying, the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right.
Makes a great gift.
It does. Thanks for coming in today.
It's a great gift. Thank you. Thank you very much. Great gift.